All right, we are on. I had a couple of little things left to do here in the studio with the guys. We are now on. We've got the fastest segment in radio. We've got Sam Shandon on. Sam is, golly, Sam, I got your whole intro here. Sam is the president and chief economist of Shandon Economics. He's a professor in the Associated Faculty of Real Estate at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. He's a noted economist and active policy commentator. Dr. Shandon is among the commercial real estate industry's leading voices in relation to capital and credit. Shandon Economics is a leading provider of data and analytics to commercial real estate lenders, investors, and policymakers with a strategic focus on real estate debt markets and credit risk management. Wow, Sam, that's a heck of an intro there. I know you're going to live up to it. I'm going to just say what's happening in commercial real estate, and then I'm just going to listen.
Jim, I'm delighted to be here. We will think of a shorter introduction for next time. However,
you're the best.
We're just rounding up the year. We're looking at some of our fourth quarter data now, trying to develop some of the preliminary trends. And I think what's fair to say is that as compared to the fourth quarter of last year, transaction volume, property sales, has actually been a little bit slower. Now, we don't want to read too much into that. We don't want to infer that the market is slowing down. In fact, what happened, your listeners will recall that in late 2012, there was a lot of uncertainty around what was going to happen with the tax regime. In fact, that went past the 11th hour, right into the first couple of days of 2013. But because there was this uncertainty, people in particular didn't know what was going to happen with the capital gains.
There you go, right.
There was a large number of sales that took place at the end of the year, and that has that means that, you know, the fourth quarter 2012 was a breakaway quarter, one of the strongest quarters we've seen since the financial, certainly the strongest quarter we had seen since the beginnings of the financial crisis. So as compared to that, our fourth quarter numbers are looking a little bit lower just in terms of the volume of sales. But if we look at some of the other trends, what's happening with property prices, what's happening with the availability of financing, are banks out there lending, are the conduits out there making mortgages that'll end up in CMBS pools. You know, the availability of financing, it has improved as well. And probably the most important thing in the data is that as compared to a year ago or 2 years ago, when a lot of the activity was heavily concentrated in just a couple of markets. You know, New York was, you know, first to recover, Washington, D.C., San Francisco, these very big markets that tend to attract a lot of institutional capital. But early in the recovery in the secondary market, you know, for the relatively smaller asset, for the private buyer of, you know, the $5 or $10 million building, you know, those markets were still really struggling. When we look at sort of what's driving some of the improvements in the overall market right now, a lot of it is that, you know, we're starting to see that secondary market begin to catch up, and that's a very positive sign for us.
Now, Sam, you know, you're talking about secondary markets catching up to primary markets, and I've noticed a very strange phenomenon there, and that's that there's been a new city that's been inching its way onto the international capital stage, and now the international financial guys from the big pension funds and hedge funds are coming to Miami to buy buildings. What's going on?
I think that's absolutely true. I think there's two things going on. One is on the residential side. There's certainly a very large number of non-U.S. or cross-border investors who are buying that as a second home or as an investment property. And that is a significant feature of the Miami market. I don't know that there's another market in the United States where on the residential condo side of things, we see cross-border buyers play as significant a role in really defining the outcomes. When we look at commercial, when we look at those office buildings, those income-generating apartment buildings, retail properties, industrial properties, there are a couple of other things going on. One is that because early in the recovery, so much capital that concentrated into just a handful of markets. You know, Boston is on that list as well. But in those markets, particularly with very, very low yields on treasuries, pricing really recovered very quickly. And we look at the yields in some of those markets, they're extremely low. And so in comparison to what's going on in New York, what's going on in Washington, D.C., some of these other primary markets like Miami, you know, are looking very attractive. You know, there's NOI growth, there's sort of income growth at the level of the individual property, but as compared to a New York, you know, the value proposition is probably a little bit better right now in the minds of many investors. And that's key to thinking about, well, what's really driving capital into some of these other primary markets right now. It also should suggest that, you know, for an investor that has, you know, focused over the last couple of years on a market like Washington, Miami is not going to necessarily be very well correlated with outcomes in the nation's capital. And so this offers the potential for, you know, some more diversification. We've got a fast-growing market. We've got a dynamic market. We've got a market that has the potential to benefit from the expansion of the Panama Canal, particularly in the industrial sector. And so, you know, you've got a whole range of things that are acting as drivers of the local and regional economy in southern Florida that really differentiate it from what's going on, you know, in the Mid-Atlantic and the East Coast.
Well, Sam, we're going to just jump around because, as you well know, very, very non-programmed thoughts just come blasting into my brain on this stuff. So we saw Ben Bernanke give the stock market a gift a couple days ago, and we saw what happened. We saw there was a little bit of a profit taking today as things settled down. But I had a client call me today and say, I've got to close my loan by year end because I'm afraid interest rates are going up. Well, I don't know that I'm really concerned about the interest rate outlook for the next 3 weeks, but I got to believe that we are going to start seeing an upward drift in rates. What do you think the impact on that's going to be on real estate?
I think it's a great question. It's one of the issues that we've been watching very, very closely for the last couple of years. I think, you know, most of the listeners are going to be able to agree that in terms of what's happened with the economy at the national level, what's happened with jobs at the national level, we've had a disappointing recovery. When we look at those job numbers, in spite of what Chairman Bernanke mentioned yesterday at the press conference coming out of the Federal Reserve's FOMC meeting, you know, he did mention that, you know, we've got some better outcomes in the labor market. Let's take that in context. We're adding roughly 180,000, 190,000 jobs a month on a net basis to total employment. And that means that several years after the recession has ended, we've recovered almost all of those jobs that we've lost. But in terms of, you know, whether there's momentum, are we creating many more jobs each month than we had been creating a year ago, 2 years ago? That momentum is really absent. Where we see improvements in the job market, it's really that we're, you know, making that slow but steady progress in replacing lost jobs. Now, this is what's motivated the Fed to say, okay, we can begin to ease off. And if you remember, earlier this year when the Fed talked about easing off, certainly last year when there was speculation that, you know, that tapering might come a little bit earlier than folks would like to see, you know, the market's reaction was actually, you know, quite negative. It certainly wasn't perceived as a gift at that point.
No.
When we look at the kind of tapering that the Fed announced yesterday, part of the reason I think that the market's reaction was fairly positive is that, you know, the Fed didn't make any bold moves. They're moving, you know, in a way that I think would be fair to describe as very cautious, perhaps for some of the detractors of monetary policy in the United States right now. You know, they wouldn't describe it as a cautious move as much as a timid move. But when we go from buying $85 billion a month of securities, treasuries, mortgage-backed securities, to $75 billion, you know, drawing it down by about 10, $75 billion by any historic norm is still an extraordinary number. Still an extraordinary degree of intervention in the private economy by the Federal Reserve. And so I think, you know, that very, very measured adjustment is part of what, you know, the market was happy about. Now, on that interest rate front, coming back to your original question, I think, you know, there are a couple of things to remember here. Last year at this time, you know, my team was talking to people in the market about a 10-year Treasury yield at the end of 2013, so just about where we are now, mm-hmm. and our baseline forecast put it at about 2.8, 2.9%. That's where we are right now, so we're feeling pretty good about, you know, the calibration on our forecast models. But on the other side of this, you know, when treasuries were below 1.5, 1.6% for that very brief period, you know, people were taking a very skeptical view of this idea that rates would go up. You know, one of the things that we heard a lot from people is, oh, the Federal Reserve won't let that happen. At least not abruptly. You know, the recovery will be slow, and so those increases in the Treasury yields will be fairly measured. The Fed doesn't have complete control over what happens with the long end of the Treasury yield curve. And by that I mean that the Fed has very strong control over the federal funds target rate, and so they can influence very strongly short-term interest rates in the United States. They aren't able to influence as strongly that long-term rate. You know, the market is really a factor there. And you know, one of the best ways to really illustrate that is that anyone who was watching the market in interest rates between May and July of 2013 Well, if the Fed was able to have controlled what happened with interest rates, they would not have allowed the Treasury yield to go up so much so abruptly. They would have smoothed that out. They wouldn't have allowed mortgage rates in the residential market to go up so quickly. Now, what that means for us as we look forward, I think sort of your colleague who's worried about continuing increases in interest rates, that's absolutely something that, you know, I think we can reasonably expect to see happen. Right now, you know, my forecast for the end of year 2014 Treasury yield, you know, barring some unexpected shock to the economy, barring, you know, some, whether it be external, whether it be internal in the United States, but barring that shock, our baseline forecast is a Treasury yield at the end of 2014 of about 3.7%.
Sam, hold on. I have to take a break. Can you stick with me so we can pick it up in about a minute and a half?
Absolutely.
High five. We're going to be right back with the fastest segment in real estate with Sam Shandon. I'm wishing everybody a happy holidays. Stick with me. Bruce is going to take us out.
I've been good and practicing real hard. Yeah. Clients, you've been rehearsing real hard now. So Santa, bring you a new saxophone, right? Everybody out there been good or what? Oh, that's not many, not many. You guys in trouble out here. Yeah, you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not.